We are rolling on the Wintrust Business Lunch at 12:10, produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. Stephen Esposito is our first guest, Executive Director, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Wealth Management. Visit morganstanley.com to catch up with these folks. We catch up with them right now. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me back.
Let's talk about some of these jobless claims. What's the big picture here? What do you see?
News for the economy just keeps getting better. I mean, the jobless claims are continue to fall. The problem I'm hearing through business leaders all over the country is they can't find people to come back to work. The real labor indicator would be the want ads. There's over 7.5 million jobs out there people are trying to fill. And everybody you talk to said they simply can't find enough help to fill the jobs. So it's a nice problem to have, but it is important that they do in order to get that business up.
How do you explain that? My understanding is there's 20 million people, or at least jobs, that existed previously that are now not filled or being filled partly. What's going on here?
Well, what many of the problem we're hearing from these business owners, et cetera, and executives is because the current stimulus package, which is giving the extra money per week, is resulting in that being competition for them. If you're getting an extra $300 a week and you're one of those basic jobs, whether it be in the food industry, et cetera, the pay is about the same. In fact, some instances higher. So there's no incentive to go back to work on that end of it. So that's creating competition at a time where you really don't want that competition because businesses are reopening and the demand is, again, I'm hearing, and depending on where you're at, is off the charts. And they're expecting to get bigger and bigger. The supply shortages, the problem is this economy has never seen this type of demand that it's seeing now and it's about to see over the next 6 to 12 months. So I guess it's a good thing. We just got to work out the kinks in the armor, so to speak.
Demand for employees for work to be done and you can't fill the positions, that's the demand?
A combination of parts for automobiles. I mean, just go to any car dealership. There's not a lot of cars on the lot.
Yeah.
You're having problems with getting chips. You have problems with labor. The demand has been, it's pent up. It's like holding a beach ball under the water. And imagine when you let go, what's going to happen. So I've even heard the Federal Reserve use the phrase, the economy's going to rip. I've been in this business nearly four decades. I've never heard something come from the Fed that the economy is going to rip.
We noticed that, too.
Never heard that term.
We noticed that, too. That wasn't the chair that said that. It was one of the governors. But still, I think that was notable for the very verb they used, because it does matter how they put these things. I wonder, the jobs that we're speaking about then must be low-paying hourly jobs, entry-level positions? Is that where this is?
Well, I think it's across the board. I mean, all the levels you need, primarily down there, where a lot of the jobs that have been lost are, obviously in our restaurant industry and hospitality, things along those lines. That's what the situation is. But yeah, I mean, across the board, it all has a domino effect. I mean, I heard some yesterday talking about all the shipping containers coming in at the ports. The words were, this is every month is like Christmas. And they just can't keep up with it. So I can imagine in 8 months what Christmas is really going to be like at that point when the vaccines are pretty much out there, that a lot of the economies of the world hopefully are open and doing better. Can you imagine what it's going to be if this is the problems they're having now?
What do you think has been most injurious to getting people back, that is to the injuring the economy that way? Was it the stimulus or was it the unemployment benefit surplus?
Yeah, I can't say it's any one thing. You know, you're coming through a situation we've never seen before experienced, an intentional lockdown of the economy. And from state to state, it's different. So you have that imbalance within the borders of the United States. Combine that with overseas in Europe, they're having more problems. They're not getting through the pandemic as well as the United States. And now in India, you're seeing massive increases there.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything, there's the supply chain all over the world, and it's not a problem, but it is right now when you're not sure what area you're getting your supplies from and the demand on the other side. So it's a very interesting experience. The good news is it's all going to be positive at the end in the sense that the jobs and the requests for product are out there. And so I see it's all going to be positive. You just got to make sure you're investing your capital the right way to take advantage of that.
Stephen Esposito's on a phone line, morganstanley.com. He's an executive director there. And yet I've heard it both ways, maybe more often the way you just put it, that the stimulus that way has been counterproductive. And that's why I asked about unemployment benefits, because it's $1,400 or $1,200 or $6. But that one-time check is enough to actually keep people from seeking employment? That strains credulity to me just a bit. People will take
the extra
$300 a week check.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. But the extra $300 a week, I watched one CEO this morning pointing out, that comes out to $15 to $20 per hour. which is mostly tax-free as opposed to what we're paying, he said, he pointed out we have 500 job openings we can't fill. And we're paying $15 to $20 an hour taxable. So how do we compete with that? I can stay at home and receive the same earnings and then I would working. So he said that's a problem we're facing in the hotel, motel, the restaurant industry, et cetera, that they're facing. Yeah. So yeah, it's a valid point. At some point, of course, those benefits will run out.
Yeah.
But they need jobs now. They need to build the ability to reopen. Even the airlines are talking. I heard several CEOs say that they expect business travel to pick up this summer already.
Boy, we all hope that. Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Senior Portfolio, that's the abridged version, Senior Portfolio Management Director. Nice to talk to you, Stephen. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Thank you for that. Ian Schur's on the line, Editor-at-Large at CNET, a regular guest on the Business Lunch. Hi, Ian.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Talk to us about the Apple release and what you do and don't like. What have you noticed about all of that?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting.
And I'll just sit back and listen because this.
Ago,
yeah, go
where
ahead.
They announced, among other things, a purple iPhone. So there you go. If you want one of those, but also they really revamped their iMacs. You may remember these are the all-in-one computers that really got Apple on the road that it's on today. Back in the 90s, they were a huge revelation compared to all those boring tan and beige boxes we had in our homes. And now they've gone back to the colors. So they have seven different colors. They have new chips in them that are actually based on the chips that are used in the iPhone and the iPad. They say that they're so powerful now that they're able to use them in their iMac as well, which is a really fascinating move. And those of us in the tech industry are watching it very closely. One of the last things that they pointed out that they announced was these things called AirTags, which are, if you've ever had a Tile device, or another one's called Tracker without the E, so I guess it's Tracker. And the whole idea is that they're able to help you find your stuff. So you attach it to a key chain or you attach it to your dog or whatever, and it will actually be able to help you find that thing, even giving you an arrow direction, telling you where to walk to find it.
I wonder if you could put that on an item, put it under the seat of your bicycle or something that might get stolen.
In theory, yes. And what's really interesting about this whole system is that just like Tile and Tracker, there's an app behind it, right? For Apple, it's called Find My. And what happens is that all the iPhones out there and all the iPads and all the Mac computers are actually talking to each other on this very quiet little whisper network, which Apple says is completely secure. And what they do is that if someone loses their device, let's say great example, right? My bike gets stolen, brought across town. If there's an iPhone in the vicinity and I mark it as lost, I'll actually get an alert from some person who didn't even know they helped me to say, hey, your thing's actually over here. So it's a really interesting idea, and it's something that up until now has been mostly a nerdy thing. Like, I have had Tile devices for a long time. I put them in my luggage, which is kind of useless these days, but I also keep one in my bag, and they've been pretty handy. So now Apple thinks that they can make it mainstream.
And that will be mainstream? In other words, it'll be on every phone? What will the application be?
Yeah, so the little device is actually like it's the size of two quarters, essentially, or maybe a half dollar. And what it is that it you can attach it to anything, right? So you can put it in a little case and attach it to your bag or whatever else. And then it talks to your phone. That's how the whole system works. But the little devices, you pay $30 a piece. They're $99 for four of them. So while it's not cheap, it is actually one of the cheapest things Apple sells, which you can see that as a joke or not.
Yep.
And that's how it'll all work.
I'll end up putting the $30 tracking device on something that costs $20. Tell me if that's a good idea. Talk to me about Netflix. What's the news there?
Yeah, they had a very interesting quarterly result. So they announced that they had grown slower than people had expected, and that despite all the investment they're putting in, it's looking like that things might be slowing down. And I think what's really fascinating about that is that when you consider how the pandemic has played out, one of the things that everyone kind of realized once we all, you know, in the beginning of all this, when we were all freaked out, is once we got calmed down, a lot of us who were stuck at home, lucky as we were, had you know, we're getting bored in the evenings. And so a lot of us signed up for these streaming services, right? Disney, HBO Max, obviously, Netflix. And the usage went through the roof. Disney reported over 100 million subscribers inside of like 18 months. That was 3 or 4 years ahead of their schedule that they had planned. It was just enormous growth. So now that the pandemic is a little bit subsiding, or at least people are starting to get outside a little more, it may be that Netflix is now starting to see a drop-off.
I thought that the reason Netflix growth slowed was because there was nobody left.
You'd be surprised. You know, one of the things that I've talked to executives a lot about, and I've been really fascinated about this because there are subscription services in the video game industry, too, by Microsoft and Sony and a bunch of others. And one of the things I've always wanted to understand was, how many subscriptions are we willing to pay for, right? Like, I'm not going to do death by a million paper cuts. Mm-hmm. And one of the former CEOs of Sony BMG and of Fox Studios, he told me that he thinks most Americans will put up with 4 subscriptions in their life. So that's it. Netflix, maybe Disney, maybe HBO, and then you're done, right? And so it's a really fascinating thing to think, well, there's like 15 of them out there, so which ones are going to win and lose?
You reported, or at least your Joan Salzman did, that Netflix reported a profit of $1.7 billion. Is that right? Is that what you, am I reading that correctly?
You are correct. You are reading that correct. And I mean, that's the thing, is that the stock market's very much about the future. It's not about the current. And one of the things that is worrying a lot of those investors, even though Netflix is making a healthy amount of money, is that if they can't continue to grow, Netflix, its entire business model is pretty much built on the idea of making really good stuff that you want to watch, like yep. Stranger Things or Bridgerton, drawing you in, you pay money, they spend more money on new stuff that draws more people in, and if that starts to reverse, they start losing money real quick.
Hmm. Venmo now lets you buy and sell cryptocurrencies. You know, this is maybe the way some older people felt when cell phones came out or smartphones. And they thought, oh, really, do I have to learn about and keep up with this? And that's kind of how I feel about all of these digital currencies and all of that stuff. Do I need to know this? Do I need to be?
No, you don't. I think what you need to know is that if you come within 5 feet of it, you need to know what you're dealing with. A lot of this stuff is very much speculation in the market, right? You talk to cryptocurrency fans and they say this is the future of commerce and all that. And maybe it is. I don't know. But I do know that right now we are still living on the dollar. And one of the things that's going on is that, you know, Bitcoin and all these other ones, there's like hundreds of them. They're all speculation based. There's nothing that they're actually tied to. And so the real question I think a lot of people have is this something that's going to turn into a real monetary instrument, or is it just going to be something that people are betting on, not that different from the horse races?
NFTs are kind of in that same camp?
Even more so, yeah. So this non-fungible token thing, which in theory is basically like a baseball card, right, but for the internet. So, you know, if I've got the Babe Ruth original, then, you know, it's worth quite a bit of money. And right now, you know, there's a lot of people obviously spending ridiculous amounts of money on NFTs. There was one that went for tens of millions of dollars. But the real question, again, is this something for real, or is it just something that people are speculating on? And that's what's worrying about, frankly, the whole economy at the moment on the internet, is that there's a lot of speculation happening, but what are the fundamentals? Those are the really worrying signs.
Fundamentals and NFTs strike me as not the same thing. They're fundamentally different things. Sign Man is putting out an NFT now of all of his original signs, and maybe somebody wants to say they have the digital receipt of those analog physical things. Maybe they do. Can you just give me a couple of seconds on Amazon opening a hair salon in London? This would be, I guess, another frontier for them to tackle, Amazon?
Yeah, so they're a very experimental company. And, I mean, you know, when they did the voice speakers, everyone thought, wow, that's ridiculous, and now all of us have a bunch of them. So this is an idea of using a tablet in a salon, and what happens is you sit down, and you can actually see what the hairstyle would look on you before they actually cut your hair. It shows an image of you in the camera, and then it just shows the different hairstyle. They're not alone doing this. Warby Parker, which is a glasses company, they actually have something called Virtual Try-On, where they basically show you what the glasses look like on your face. But the problem, of course, is that you don't, half of owning glasses is how they fit on your face. So it's interesting to see this going, and Amazon's definitely doing a test. They're only doing one of them, the salons, but it's interesting. They're experimenting, and I'm always for experimentation.
We're always for Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET. Thank you, Ian.
Take care.
This will not be the first or last conversation we'll have on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, produced by Pete Zimmerman, about what going back to work is going to look like and for whom. Here is Rebecca Ryan, economist and futurist. RebeccaRyan.com is the website. Rebecca, welcome to WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about what's happened. Since the pandemic started, folks that were still able to work largely worked from home if they were in an office, and a lot of them are still there, right, at home.
Yeah, the Chicago Tribune reports that the building vacancy rate is 15%, and only about 15 to 20% of workers are back in the office.
Yeah, I saw a story in the Times that 90% of the people that went home in New York City are still at home. Manhattan and the work boroughs of New York City do not have people there right now. And I guess the question is, is that a problem? And then how do we accommodate people if it is? Where's your head on all of that, Rebecca?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking to the future. So a couple of kind of big beats in this. One is forward-looking organizations a decade ago, 15 years ago, were starting to offer remote work, to get great talent. Talent can be anywhere in the world these days. And by offering remote work, you could cast a wider pool, quite a wider net for that talent. But B, now that we've gone through COVID, a lot of employers are catching up on this. They're saying, oh, my gosh, this actually can work. So I don't know that we're going to go back to a 5-day a week in the office model for people who can work from home. And by the way, that's over half of all jobs can be done remotely at least sometime.
You said great talent, and I get your point. If you want to get great talent, maybe you can accommodate them by letting them work at home. Is this true, though, too, though? Great talent is even greater when it's in the office, when it's interacting in a sort of corporate culture?
This is such a valuable question, John, to be asking, because I think there is a very natural and understandable nostalgia, right? We remember back to the before times when we were all in the office seeing each other on a regular basis. But I want us to be really careful as we think to the future, because not everything about that corporate culture was awesome. For starters, traffic. Traffic is the thing, commuting is the single daily activity that most brings people down. So some people who are working remotely are saying, oh my gosh, I actually have more time for meaningful interaction with my family, or I'm getting an extra 30 minutes or 45 minutes of sleep. So definitely we've got to maintain those social, those opportunities for social cohesion at work, but we might have to think about doing it in a slightly different way.
Where does Zoom fit into all of this?
Yeah, well, they are to tissues what Kleenex is, right? I mean, Zoom has become the synonym for video-based teleconferencing. And so I think, well, number one, they've done very well, but I also think you're going to see a wild west of additional add-ons, like Microsoft Teams is rapidly trying to improve its technology. WebEx and Cisco are doing the same. I think you're going to see a wild west for the next 2 to 3 years as all of this works its way out. And we adjust to this new sort of next era workforce that is going to be hybrid. It's going to be some remote and some in place.
Is Zoom fatigue a real thing?
It is. And the science is showing that it's because we are looking at ourselves on the camera, on the screen. So I don't know if you've seen that new feature where Zoom allows you to turn off self-view, and they invented that to try to overcome Zoom fatigue.
Well, I'd like to think that somebody might be able to find, and that's not the only problem that I'm reading, you're the expert, but with Zoom, it's just screen time, period. You know, another guest we've had on named Tom Gimble disagrees with you on what Zoom fatigue is all about, and I just wonder if we are going to stay hybrid or at home, then how are we going to make the screen manageable? Because traffic sucks, but I think looking at a computer all day does too. So I don't know what the future says about that.
Oh, John, this is a really insightful comment. And I think what you're getting at is, in the future, we've got to get away from this all-in or all-out thinking, to say like, oh, we're either on screen all day or we're sitting in traffic. We have to take a more nuanced view of this. What we know is that collaboration works well when we can see our co-collaborators' facial expressions and body language, and when we have a shared collaboration space. Those are the two things that are necessary. But what we also know is that not all of your work every day is collaborative. And to default to this meetings-based problem solving, which is what I think of as the old way of doing things, to this new model, which is, okay, let's give our employees autonomy. Let's tell them, be really clear about what their job is, and then give them some autonomy to get their job done. Not everything needs to be collaborative. So I think the leading organizations in the future are going to be those who have really gotten smart about when you really do need to pull people together in a Zoom and when you don't.
I think the Band-Aid to that right now, they recognize the problem. We're not there yet. Is they say, okay, Wednesdays, half day, no Zoom, no video conferencing of any kind, stuff like that. You've heard of those solutions, right?
Yeah, and it reminds me of the productivity solution that maybe you heard from a few years ago, where companies were saying no emails on Tuesdays or no emails on Fridays, because emails are another sort of productivity killer, similar to Zoom. And I think that what we're both pointing to here is that we need to be able to tighter our productivity. Like, how much Zoom creates Zoom fatigue and actually kills productivity? How much autonomy is enough for good productivity?
One last thing. Is this conversation at all gender specific?
I don't think so. I think a better way to think about it would be more like work style specific. So you've got introverts and extroverts as two examples, right? Extroverts probably like Zoom a bit more than introverts do. You've got people who are real drivers. You know, they really like to get work done, and they think if they can't see people, they can't be sure that they're getting their work done. And then you've got people who are more collaborators, you know, who are more like, hey, here's where we're headed. I trust you guys to do your work. So I don't think it's gendered so much as it is personality and communication style.
Rebecca, we're going to ask you back again. I guess you knew that. You're a futurist. Rebecca Ryan is an economist and futurist. RebeccaRyan.com. Really nice to talk to you. Thanks for your insight today.
Thanks, John. A pleasure.
It's 12:44. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago Alderman Scott Wagaspak has introduced a new ordinance to extend the limits on fees that delivery apps can charge restaurants. During the pandemic, the city put a 15% cap on fees that services like DoorDash and Grubhub charge restaurant partners. Wagaspak of the 32nd Ward is looking to extend the ordinance with a goal of making it permanent. The city of Chicago will allow new signage on some downtown buildings. The newly changed rules permit a second sign if a tenant leases at least 450,000 square feet or 60% of a building. The company also has to have its international or national headquarters, including its CEO, based in the building. BMO Financial Group is one of the companies planning to take advantage of the change when it moves into its 50-story tower under construction next to Union Station. BMO Financial plans two signs at the top of the building, one facing west, the other facing south. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, let me add to what Joe just said. The reason for that dive suddenly on Wall Street was an announcement or a report by Bloomberg that President Biden is considering a capital gains tax as high as 43.4%, which is on the wealthy, which is almost double what it is right now. Happy Earth Day to you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Yep. What better way to celebrate Earth Day than to talk about the Earth, as in farmland? And farmland continues to get more expensive, as the old saying goes, they aren't making more of it. In Jones County, Iowa, just east of Cedar Rapids, 200 acres of farmland sold for $18,800 per acre. The average in that county is about $7,500. And it wasn't some big-shot billionaire speculator who ran up the bidding, a neighboring farmer bought that land. Oh, by the way, hats off to farmers on this Earth Day who demonstrate every day that they are the best stewards of the land. And meanwhile, there's some farmers in northern Illinois and elsewhere dealing with a crime spree. Several farmers in and around McHenry County have reported the theft of GPS receivers right off of the top of their John Deere tractor cabs. That gizmo makes auto steer possible. Farmers had auto steer long before Tesla came around. So what's this gizmo look like?
Say a bowling ball, half a bowling ball.
James Kennedy works for Buck Brothers dealership in Hampshire. He says brand new, those receivers are about $3,500, but they're hard to get because of the supply chain issues that are impacting seemingly every other product, and they can nearly triple in price on the used market.
We've seen receivers on auction sites and Facebook Marketplace for $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a piece.
Someone who knows what they're doing can remove one of those GPS receivers in a minute or so. There's no way to disable them from the John Deere satellite, but luckily a lot of farms have security cameras.
Yeah, a lot of local police, they've done their due diligence in locating vehicles, identifying license plate numbers, and making arrests.
Newer models of these have locks available for them, but the older ones, tractor owners are advised to just take them off and put them away during downtime where nobody can get to them. A hassle for sure, but it may save some headaches. Not just McHenry County, by the way, where this is happening. Farmers in France and Germany chimed in on Twitter that they have the problem there, too. Another double-digit day at the Chicago Board of Trade. Beans right now are up 39. Let's make it 40 cents a bushel at 15.19. Corn hit the max of 25 cents higher at 6.31.5. And wheat is up 40 cents a bushel at 17.15. Cattle and hogs are trading lower today. Oh, this is National Jelly Bean Day today, by the way. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth, let's start with Taco Bell. I just want to read the headline and then give me your reaction to this, all right?
Yes.
Taco Bell is testing a new meat alternative. I just hate those words, meat alternative.
I know.
Nothing sounds less appealing than meat alternative.
I know. I think that the entire effort is kind of struggling to figure out what to call itself. I think a lot of people are saying plant-based protein, but then some people want to know what plants because there's food allergies. So I think there's a lot of questions there. Eventually, I'm sure we'll settle into calling it something. But for now, Taco Bell is calling it the Cravetarian Taco. It's a catchy little name. It's a taco that is it's right now only available in California until next week, until April 29th. But they're going to then assess how this test went and consider rolling it out to a broader market. I think, you know, Taco Bell is one of the latest that we've seen experiment with how to incorporate plant-based protein on their menu. We saw, you know, Subway trying to dabble in that. We've seen it from other places. And of course, you know, Burger King kind of led that with the Impossible Whopper. So it's Taco Bell is just the latest to do that. So we shall see how the test goes and what that will mean for other Taco Bells.
Do you know what their alternative meat is made of?
It is from peas and chickpeas. They're calling it a boldly seasoned plant-based protein, but it's the base of it is pea protein and chickpea protein.
Yeah. You know, where the beef is not the feature in a taco, maybe it is. To me, it's the blend of it all. So if you had a plant-based seasoned stuff in there with all the rest of the stuff, I don't know, for some reason that seems more appealing to me than a plant-based hamburger. I don't like these Impossible Burgers myself.
Yeah, right. Burgers. I think everybody's kind of got their favorite brand. What's interesting about the Taco Bell one is that it was made it's proprietary. It was made in-house at the Taco Bell test kitchen, whereas a lot of other companies have been looking to Impossible Meat and Beyond Meat and these kind of other big company names.
In the this is connected to that category, you've got a factory shut down in Chicago, not because they couldn't find rubber tires or steel, right?
Yeah, it's all about that chip shortage that is really, we're seeing some really major impacts around the world due to this chip shortage. You and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. You know, it's not just an engine in a car, right? If any car now has got like a screen in the dashboard and lots of computer running parts. So it needs these chips. And the chip shortage has really badly impacted
the automotive supply chain. So there are going to be an expansion of that shutdown from Ford. They announced the plant in Chicago, the one in Flat Rock, Michigan, the two F-150 plants in Kansas City. They're all going to be shut down from May 3rd through the 10th. We saw this earlier. We saw a Chicago assembly that builds the Explorer and Lincoln Navigator crossover. They were idled since about April 12th. So they're expanding that. That's, you know, and at the end of the day, that's about workers and paychecks when you don't have the work there that you were counting on. So the longer this goes on, I think the more we're going to see, you know, pain from workers in the automotive industry. So hopefully that chip shortage gets sorted out soon. But we're also seeing it in the UK. Jaguar and Land Rover, they've also halted production at two UK factories for exactly the same reason. It's all about this microchip shortage. So we're seeing this in other areas, like in the tech hardware sector and computers, things like that. But it's mostly really impacting the automotive sector.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. Although everything is sort of predicated on what the pandemic did to certain things. I was actually pricing pickup trucks the other day, a used pickup truck. And some folks were telling me that pickup trucks hold their value. And especially now, I guess it's somehow related to all of that. But if you want to get a good price on a good pickup truck, good luck. I mean, you'll get the going price and it might be a fine vehicle. But there aren't any hot bargains out there in that category.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, F-150 is one of the top selling trucks in the country. And so for shutdowns there, it's going to impact dealers. A couple of dealers have talked with a couple of different news outlets, you know, talking about how hard it is to just meet supply when someone's like, hey, I want to buy a truck and I want it to have these, you know, specifications and maybe this color. That's getting harder and harder to do right now because of these shutdowns at the plant level.
My son sent me a note because he knew I was looking and he said, what color do you want? And I said, well, I really don't care. And he said, okay, pink it is. Maybe we'll find you something there. And I'm also looking at our producer, Pete, because I don't know that we've done a segment lately on what the car dealers are seeing here in Chicagoland. What's on the lot? What's not? What's moving? Interest rates are low. I would imagine that if the economy is booming or getting ready to rip, as they say, that maybe car sales will be the beneficiaries of that, too.
Yeah, maybe. I think that would be an interesting to hear from a bunch of car dealers on that. Hopefully they're not feeling the effects of the chip shortage. It may not be that they may not feel that for a while. It might be a little bit further down the supply chain of where they're not getting the deliveries that they've ordered. But yeah, that would be an interesting segment for sure.
I wonder if people are using their stimulus checks and tax returns as down payments. We'll look into that here and we'll talk to Amy Guth there another day. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.